Thank you, Steve. As you see, it's the San Joaquin Valley Revisited. What we'd like to do, I'd like to do today is have a brief introduction. Then we'll talk a little bit about solutions to the San Joaquin Valley drainage disposal and something called sequential biological concentration. Just in terms of background, sort of a fact of life, if you're a drainage engineer, you're going to say that drainage required to sustain irrigated agriculture. Now, it could be simply that you have to have enough drainage, internal drainage, which is fine, but for the most part, some sort of drainage is going to be required then to sustain irrigated agriculture. And there's roughly 3.2 million hectares of irrigated agriculture in California, of which some 400,000 probably require drainage. And the biggest problem we have is, what do you do with the saline drainage water? And how are you going to dispose of that and have a minimum impact on the environment? And I think one of the things that I've been astounded about today, and I guess it's my turn, is that we've gone all this distance and not mentioned Kesterson Reservoir once. Because really, what we're talking about, the Kesterson Reservoir, which was a regulating reservoir that was supposed to handle the drainage flow from the Westlands Water District, which was some 600,000 acres of irrigated land, but never really went further than a wetland where we had evaporation pond sort of system developed, and then there were a lot of biological impacts that has eventually resulted in the closure of the Kesterson Reservoir and the elimination of drainage from about 600,000 acres of land. And what we see here is something called the Rainbow Report, affectionately in California, and this was a joint federal project that evaluated drainage water disposal alternatives. It cost, well, they spent about $50 million, and it was issued in 1990, and it has a very nice long title. And this was done, and you've seen the areas that that were concerned with this particular study. And the recommendations, there were about six major recommendations that came out of that: source control, drainage water reuse, evaporation systems, land retirement, groundwater management, discharge of the San Joaquin River. I think you can probably guess which ones are valid and which ones aren't. The three in blue are the ones that I'll talk about, are the ones that are being implemented. The other suggestions have either technical or political or management problems, and they're really not being implemented now. Source control, then, is what it says it is. You know, what is the source of the water that we're trying to dispose of? And what should the first step that you have, be is simply reduce the volume of water that you have to take care of. And that's done by improving the irrigation system management and the design. And this is not only the irrigation system, but also the drainage system. Simple things. And, the thing that strikes you as you look at these is a lot of this is not new high-tech sorts of solutions. These are just implementation of what engineers have known for a long time, but simply laser leveling, trying to get the right sort of grade. As it was mentioned earlier, about 80% of the irrigation is surface irrigation, so what you really need is to have a good surface, a well-designed system, then that you can flow water across very efficiently. Another thing is just adjust the run length. It was not uncommon in the past to have a mile long run, half mile long run. If you taking a look at the length of time it takes to move water across the mile and some of these things, you're going to see you have a lot of deep percolation loss on one end and not too much on the other. So one of the easy things to do is then just adjust that, and that's has had a lot of experience with that in some of the research he's done. But say you've gone from a mile to a half mile to a quarter to a third mile, and it works quite well. Sort of simple design sorts of things. Another one is use sprinklers or pre-plant in the first crop irrigation. And what the implication is here is that since we are using surface irrigation systems, most of the deep percolation loss occurs during something called pre-plant irrigation, which is irrigating in a fallow period, then to bring the soil water content back up to a level that you can plant to, or and provide some salinity control as well. And typically what had been done in the past is you had long run lengths and farmers felt like a little water was good, a lot was better if we're trying for salinity control. So we would have pre-plant irrigations with 24-hour set times, applying maybe 12 inches of water to a soil that could hold at most 6 inches of water, so they have to figure out where the other six went. Well, that's one thing that was done, certainly looking back to reduce the set times, but also with a surface system like our sprinkler system, you have better distribution uniformity. The other one is, what is that first irrigation that you have? And if you think about the system, if crops have been planted, if we'll use cotton for an example, in March, early April, it's going to be irrigated in May, it'll be 2 or 3 inches high. How big a root system does it have? Not a very big root system. So if you're using a surface irrigation system, if you're lucky, you can apply 4 inches of water. If you're good, you can apply 4 inches of water. So you're, again, applying a whole lot more water than's really required than for to meet the requirement for the crop. So simply going to a sprinkler system, then you can match that requirement pretty easily. How about changing crops? Now we're seeing an awful lot of that in the valley now, where in the past we've had a lot of cotton, tomatoes, long season crops, high water requirements. So we're getting back into something like the leafy vegetables, a lot of vegetables early spring, fall crops that have a lot shorter water, a lot less water requirements. So there's a lot of that that's going on as well. Okay, changing irrigation systems. And of course this one makes a lot of sense, that surface drip irrigation, subsurface drip irrigation, and in the past it's used quite a bit in California, but it's been mostly on permanent crops, trees, vines, that sort of thing. But we're seeing a lot more of this type of application in particularly like a tomato crop, something like this. And this is a result of a nice confluence of technologies, basically. In the past, when one of my bosses started looking at this, if you put in a run length, if you were lucky, if it was 300 feet long, now you can get quarter mile run lengths with drip tubing. You have a GPS-guided tractor that's going to put it in exactly the right distance and depth and everything. And so you have the technologies available to make this type of system work fairly effectively. And there are some fairly large farmers that are actually implementing this. And with the drip system, you have excellent control then on the water in terms of the amount of water you're applying, when you're applying it, and it's a very effective system. Another thing is just simply improve your irrigation scheduling. Determine the crop water requirements. I mean, we think we know what the crop water requirements are, but when was the last time anybody really looked to determine, exactly what is required for these various crops? Now, a little larger issue is this idea of on-demand delivery, because most of the irrigation systems, the water districts rather, provide water through open channels. And so to provide water on demand as opposed to a rotation system then requires a little extra effort, but if you're really going to meet the irrigation schedule, you need to have that type of flexibility. The other thing is then to modify your irrigation schedule to take account of the crop water use from shallow groundwater systems. And there's been a lot of work done over the years, and in several places, if you have shallow groundwater systems, you can eliminate at least one irrigation, oftentimes more. And so that's another way. It has a dual effect. You reduce the total volume you apply, and you reduce the total water requirement, and you're also reducing the potential drainage as a result of that. The other system was mentioned then was this idea of drainage water reuse. And this has been looked at extensively in the San Joaquin Valley and is found to be a fairly effective system, quite frankly. And there are several ways of approaching this problem of taking drainage water and reusing it as a supplemental irrigation system. One method is called cyclic, where you use good water and poor water and you kind of balance it to ensure your crop gets started. Some people will like the idea of taking some good water and putting it into poor water and getting it down so you get a salinity that a crop can tolerate. That's fine. The limitations then are the toxics that you might find. And We have boron, arsenic. There's a lot of things there, but from an agronomic standpoint, the boron is going to be a problem. And the larger issue then is, if you're going to reuse drainage water, you have to be able to keep it around to use it. You're going to have some storage, or you're going to have to be able to use it. So you're going to have to be able to manage your drainage system, and that will also improve crop water use. So we talk about boron, that's a potential impact, but actually this is a crop that was grown with about 6 decisiemen water, so that was not bad. And the only thing to focus on here then is the treatment with F is non-saline water, and D was saline water, about 6 decisiemen water. With the exception of wheat, the yields were all the same, basically. There was no yield response there. To have shallow groundwater management, you're going to have to reorient the subsurface drainage system's lateral so you don't waterlog one end of the field, and otherwise it would be sort of a non-starter. And you're also going to have a drainage system that actually has controls on it. And the idea of managing shallow groundwater systems in arid areas is a new one. Now, there's been a lot of work been done in the East in looking at managing drainage systems there, but not in our situation, simply because you have the potential with salinity accumulation is the thing we worry about. This was a project we had at Broadview, and the small circles are just observation wells. The black circle is where we had some controls, and you know, this was just a schematic of way we were controlling on the sub main. We just had lateral controls, and this shows then that actually you can control the water table's position fairly well. The one on the right side with the valves closed, and it was about a meter to a meter and a half below the surface, which is ideal from the standpoint of crop water use from a shallow groundwater system. The farmer wanted to harvest the tomatoes. We opened the valves a week later, the drainage system, the water table had dropped. So it's a fairly effective technique. The other thing that happens is that we're talking about salt load, and Jan was talking about the impact then of precipitation of some of these things. But what we're looking at here is the typical flow path of deep percolation losses from irrigation down to the drains, and down through the profile and back up to the drains. And the thing that comes out of this particular slide is the fact that we have a situation in the San Joaquin Valley that the salt concentration with depth is increasing. So you're getting, the further you go into the profile, the higher then is the salt load, the salt concentration. So what you're doing is, when you run water down that deep, you're actually mining salt out of the soil and bringing it back up to the drain for discharge. So one of the things then that you should be cognizant of, if you modify those flow paths so you're not going quite as deep in the soil, then what you're also going to be doing is modifying the load from those drains. And this is some work that a colleague of mine did in Australia, and it comes out fairly dramatically, actually. If you look at just the deep unmanaged drains and the managed drains, you look at the difference in volume of water that was discharged from there, and look at the difference in the average salinity and the salt load. So you, by changing the way you manage the drainage system, you reduce the salt load by about 50%. And it's, we've seen other, I don't have it quite as dramatic, but we've seen similar sorts of things with data we've taken in the San Joaquin Valley. The shallow drains was a mold drain system, so that's sort of, it's not quite apples and oranges, comparing everything straight up there. One of the things, the reason I put this in is that, we've come to a point then that we have all the elements basically that have been demonstrated singularly for, to go into one of these systems. And we have sequential biological concentration in the San Joaquin Valley, we call it integrated on-farm drainage management. And it's a lot of work that Bashek Cervenka and the people that he's worked with, NRCS, have worked with over the years. But basically, the idea is that you collect drainage water off a set of fields, you bring it then to another field where you irrigate a crop, and by successively reusing it, you will increase the salinity within the deep percolate that you're using, and you're going to decrease the drainage volume, And ultimately, then you will discharge. So the idea is that you have a salt-sensitive crop that you irrigate with fresh water. Then you gather that drainage water up and you take it to the next crop. And depending on the salinity of that water, you'll select your salt-tolerant crop, and then you'll irrigate again. And then you have a even more saline solution that you're using. So halophytes, more salt-tolerant crops, whatever. And eventually, the last step then is a solar evaporator. And this is the way you're going to dispose of the remaining drainage water that you've generated. And this is the problem, actually. And this is where sort of the rubber meets the road, is that a lot of the elements that have been, the first three slides or first three steps, have been fairly well researched, and they seem to be fairly effective. And we know that you can evaporate the water, but the challenge then is, what do you do with this accumulated salt? And that's really the ongoing problem. And this type of system for on-farm drainage disposal is gaining a lot of traction as a method then to sustain irrigated agriculture on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley while we work through other issues, I guess might be a polite way to say it. So you might have something like a pepper crop or something like this. You could go into Jose Thal wheatgrass. So I mean, actually cotton would be another crop that, an intermediate step in this process because it is a salt tolerant crop. And the actual final design is really going to be predicated on what the salt load is out of those drains. And the theory in terms of salt concentration doesn't work exactly in the San Joaquin Valley for some of the issues that actually Jan pointed out. So then you've got this nice recirculating evaporation facility. You notice there's no standing water, and that's by design, because standing water is not permitted in these kinds of systems. And this is a regulated system that's regulated by the state, basically. And so they have fairly strict requirements on what you can do. And the last thing I have here is retired land. Currently there's, I think, about 100,000 acres of land that's been purchased in the San Joaquin Valley by the Westlands Water District. And their challenge is, what do you do with it? Because you simply cannot let it sit there. I mean, this is some land that was fallowed, the farmer walked away from it, who knows what, and this is what it looked like after a fairly short period of time. And I had the idea that you're going to have 200,000 acres of land that looked like this in the middle of a productive area is probably not very viable. That you're really going to have to look at some sort of long-term management. And Westlands is doing that. They are looking for people who are willing to lease the land, look at dry land agriculture. There's a lot of things that are being considered, but it will be part of the challenge with these kinds of systems as to how you manage lands that have been retired to keep them from adversely impacting and salinizing, maybe. So in summary, there's no single solution for the problem of saline drainage water disposal. It's going to have to be done for each place. There are technical solutions, but there are not political solutions. And in California, politics is everything, and it's reasonable. But certainly, it's an ongoing challenge that we face. Sequential biological concentration is an interim solution. And so we can work at it. And I always have to give Jan van Schildkaart, who's, I'm a drainage engineer, so, you have certain people that you look up to, and he would be one for me, and he was fairly heavily involved with a lot of the research and a lot of the politics that went on in the San Joaquin Valley related to the Rainbow Report. And his comment was that, if you don't want to get into a problem with drainage, you construct the drainage system from the outlet. And rather than doing it from the head end and trying to hope you make it to the outlet, which is what happened in the San Joaquin Valley, which is why we got where we are, whether that's good or bad. But anyway, that's a lesson to be learned for people who get involved in drainage research and drainage system construction. Thank you. Yeah.
Jim, right at the beginning, you showed us those six, and you said, you know, we're only working on three. I'd argue you showed us all but rail tie in your presentation. You showed us, you know, shallow groundwater management.
Yeah.
You know, you showed us in the last one, you know, some sort of evaporation.
Yeah, but the evaporation systems they were talking about are evaporation ponds, and they don't, you know, they don't qualify. I mean, yes, you're right in that regard. That you are using evaporation, but the problem with evaporation ponds is they're fairly expensive, and you have to have compensation and mitigation wetlands, and there's a lot of real big issues related to managing those. So most people are not, you know, going there. I mean, the Tulare Lake Drainage District has evaporation ponds. There are a few that are in the valley, but most people have been in the process of getting rid of them rather than keeping them for a lot of managerial problems. Yes? Well, you see, the problem is that if it was partly the way the Bureau designed the thing. You know, they thought, well, we can make it to the outlet, you know, so they built the irrigation system, and the Bureau was actually responsible for providing drainage. And so they simply started the drainage system thinking that somehow or another they would get all the way to the outlet. And they didn't. All they got to was the Kesterson Reservoir on the San Luis Drain, and then they shut it down, and then they had to do an environmental impact statement, and then that went on for a very long time. And then pretty soon you had all the problems that were associated with Kesterson Reservoir with the bioaccumulation of selenium and the dead chicks and ducks and geese, and I don't know, whatever else. I mean, so there was an environmental consequence. So, I mean, the idea with a drainage system is that when you put it in, you don't want all the drainage coming to you, basically. If you start at the outlet, then once you get to the area that you're being drained, then the system can go ahead and run.